The Bible is filled with promises. Promises for me and promises for you. But it's also filled with promises for many people that have already come and gone on this earth. They've already spent their time here and gone on to eternity. But be that as it may, while those people were still alive on earth, the Lord made sure His promises to them were fulfilled. Such is the case with the division of the promised land to the people of the nation of Israel. But there was also a promise to a spy who searched out the land of Canaan with the 12 spies at the beginning of the second year out of the promised land. And it was time for that promise to be fulfilled also. So the taking of Canaan land began with the crossing of the Jordan River in 1424 BC. 40 years after leaving Egypt. That's when it took place. And as we discover in this chapter, it is a little more than 5 years later, and it is time for Joshua and Eleazar, the high priest, to apportion the land in the promised land. In the last chapter, land taken by Moses on the east side of the Jordan River was already granted to Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh. So now it is time to take the land that has been taken on the west side of the Jordan River and give it to the people, the tribes, the other 9.5 tribes. So we're going to start with the land on the west side of the Jordan River by calling the head of the households together to hand out these portions of land. So we're in chapter 14 of the book of Joshua, and we start with verse 1. Now there are the territories which the sons of Israel inherited in the land of Canaan, which Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the heads of the households of the tribes of the sons of Israel apportioned to them for an inheritance, by the lot of their inheritance, as the Lord commanded through Moses, for the 9 tribes and half tribe. So 2.5 tribes already had their land on the other side of the Jordan River on the east side. 9.5 tribes remained to receive their land on the west side of the Jordan River. So the Lord gave the assignment by lot to the tribes back in Numbers chapter 26, verse 55, chapter 33, verse 54, and chapter 34, verse 13, back in Numbers. That's how we know about the lots. So to be thorough, the writer here in Joshua repeats the gifts of the inheritance to the 2.5 tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan River. We've already heard about this twice. Now we hear about it again. Remember, the Hebrew writers tend to tell a story, go on, come back and tell more, give more detail, come back and tell more, give more details, so that you have more details each time you come past it. Verse 3 is just that. For Moses had given the inheritance of the 2 tribes and the half tribe beyond the Jordan, but he did not give an inheritance to the Levites among them. That's where we left off in the last lesson, because the Lord was their inheritance. So in addition to the land for the Levites, that they did not receive any on the east side, they're not going to receive any on the west side either in the areas, especially in the areas of Manasseh and Ephraim. They're just not going to get it. Verse 4. For the sons of Joseph were 2 tribes, Manasseh and Ephraim, and they did not give a portion to the Levites in the land except cities to live in, with their pasture lands for the livestock and for their property. Thus the sons of Israel did just as the Lord had commanded Moses, and they divided the land. Cities will be granted as donations to these Levites on both the east side and the west side. Farmland will be there to take care of the gifts that come to the Lord, which become the inheritance of the Levites. So they have to have places for the livestock to be. And so that's the reason why in every area there is land and some cities that is given to them or donated to them for use. But they do not own the land. Okay, so once that's been done, it was time to begin dividing up the land on that main, from, and they're back at that main camp at Gilgal. And there's time to start dividing the land. And there in Gilgal, up comes Caleb. And Caleb makes a request. We have the request of Caleb, and we start with Caleb's introduction in verse 6. Then the sons of Judah drew near to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, "You know the word which the Lord spoke to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea." You see, Joshua was one of the spies of the 12 spies, and so was Caleb. He was one of the 12 spies. So to set the scene here, the time of the division of the land for the west side, they're on that west side of the Jordan River. They're at Gilgal, and they've conquered the land, most of it. And it's for that reason that the leaders in Joshua have drawn together the heads of all the 12 tribes, and they're going to divide the land. And Caleb, who is a descendant of the tribe of Judah, who is in the lineage of Jacob's son Judah, to Caleb, and that lineage, if you want to know what it is, it was Judah, then Perez, then Hezron, then Kenaz, then Jephunneh, and then Caleb. That's the lineage. So Caleb mentions the promise that Moses made to Caleb when he and Joshua had come back to Kadesh Barnea more than 40 years before this time is happening. It's in the second year after leaving Egypt, and Caleb will include the promise in his story that we will see next here in verse 7, Caleb's story. "I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought word back to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt with fear, but I followed the Lord my God fully. So Moses swore on that day, saying, 'Surely the land on which your foot has trodden will be an inheritance to you and to your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God fully. Now behold, the Lord has let me live just as He spoke these 45 years, from the time that the Lord spoke His word to Moses when Israel walked in the wilderness. And now, behold, I am 85 years old. I am still as strong today as I was in the day Moses sent me. As my strength was then, so my strength is now, for war and for going out and coming in.'" The Lord promised Caleb that he would inherit the land that the 12 spies had spied out when Moses sent them out back in Numbers chapter 14, verse 24. And at that time, the full impact of that promise was very vague. With Caleb's testimony, it became clear. We hear the word of the Lord back in Numbers chapter 14, 24. Here's what it says there. "But my servant Caleb, because you have had a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land which he entered, and his descendants shall take possession of it." Translation: where you just went is going to belong to you. Hebron was the land which Caleb entered to spy out, and it is Hebron which is going to be given to Caleb as his inheritance. Now, unless you did not notice it, the writer has once again established the timeline for us that we had lost. We did not know where we were, but now they're back at Gilgal. And it has also established the time it took for the nation of Israel to carry out the campaign against central, southern, and northern Israel, or Canaan land, to take it for their own. It took them 5 years. How do we know? Well, in verse 7, we hear Caleb say, "I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land." In verse 10, we hear Caleb say, "Now behold, the Lord has let me live just as he spoke these 45 years from the time that the Lord spoke His word to Moses when Israel walked in the wilderness. And now behold, I am 85 years old." Well, if Caleb was 40 years old when he went to spy out the land, and now it took 40 years for them to spend and go and do all of that, if it took that, it took the nation of Israel. He's now 85. You got that? So he's 40 years when he went to spy, 40 years waiting to get into the promised land. And now he's 85 and they finished the campaign. It took them 5 years, not quite six, less than six, but 5 years for this whole time to transpire. They've been fighting for 5 years. Remember this. In the way they thought, they had no zero. So they didn't work a year and say, we've been worked a year. The day they set foot on the land to start conquering was year one. So that means that it took them just right at maybe just a few days or months longer than true 5 years for them to take the land. So at the end of Caleb's story, we come to Caleb's request. Caleb's request, verse number 12. Now then, give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day, for you heard on that day that Anakim were there with great fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me, and I will drive them out as the Lord has spoken. The Anakim have already been killed by the nation around, but not in the city of Hebron, but all around. They've been killed, okay? Already, that happened in chapter 11, verse 21 through 22. So Caleb's purpose in mentioning the Lord's promise is simply to identify with surety the city with which he wanted to take. So the decision was made for the gift to go to Caleb, the town of Hebron. So Joshua blessed him and gave him Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. Therefore, Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, until this day, because he followed the Lord God of Israel fully. So Hebron means alliance. Now the name was originally attached to the valley of Hebron. They call it the Valley of Alliance. That's what it was called back in the Canaanite language. The main name of the valley now is the Valley of Eshcol, because it means it runs right by Eshcol, which is a major city that is there. According to Numbers chapter 13, verse 22, the city of Hebron was established 7 years before the city of Zoan was established in Egypt. You find that over in Genesis chapter 23, verse 2. Hebron was originally divided into four sections, with each group living in alliance with the others, and that's the reason it means this means alliance. There were four different groups of folks that were living there. One of them was the Anakim. Now, our writer tells us that Kiriath Arba, well, that was the former name of the city of Hebron in verse 15. Now, the name of Hebron was formerly Kiriath Arba, for Arba was the greatest man among the Anakim. Then the land had rest from war. We have mentioned Hebron many times in this study. In Genesis chapter 35, verse 17, we find the name attached to it, and with the name is attached with the name Mamre. As the oaks of Mamre, where Abraham bought a cave as a burial tomb for Sarah. He would be buried there along with Isaac, and along with Rebekah, along with Jacob. We find that in Genesis chapter 23, verses 2 through 20. He purchased the cave from Ephron the Hittite. Kiriath means the city of. Arba is the name of the father of the Anakim. And it was his city because he had conquered it. So it was the city of Arba, which means Kiriath Arba. Therefore, it was the city of Arba, even though it has been called Hebron in all the places of Genesis and Joshua, until the town is given to Caleb. And when the town is given to Caleb, the name of the town of Kiriath Arba is changed to Hebron. Caleb is the one who changes the name. I can show that to you in many places in the book of Genesis, because as Moses is writing that, he is updating the names so we will know where they are, into the Hebrew names instead of to the Canaanite names. Now, with the gift of the vicinity of Hebron given to Caleb, Joshua and Eleazar could continue with the division of the promised land and the tribal areas assigned to Judah. But before I proceed with that, I want to interject a thought here. 45 years before, Moses had promised Caleb that he would inherit that area that he spied out that we know as Hebron. Caleb was of the tribe of Judah. Therefore, because Caleb's gift was fulfilled, it forced Joshua and Eleazar to carve Judah's land around Caleb. Thus the lot, when they were picking it out, fell to Judah. Now, what was a lot? The word means literally a pebble. In this case, 10 pebbles would be used. 9 pebbles for the 9 tribes and a pebble for the half tribe of Manasseh. Each pebble would have a name put on it or a mark for a tribe. They would be put into a bag or into a jar, and the leader would select a pebble for the next division, and the Jews expected the Lord to control the drawing of each pebble from the bag of the jar in order of His divine will. And as such, Judah's pebble must have been drawn first. The Lord had done it. In the Lord's will, Caleb's Hebron fell within the gift of the first lot of Judah. And so the writer gives outlines of the borders of Judah in 4 directions, south, east, west, and north. And we begin with the southern border of Judah in chapter number 15, verse 1. Now the lot for the tribe of the sons of Judah, according to their families, reached the border of Edom, southward to the wilderness of Zin at the extreme south. Their south border was from the lower end of the Salt Sea, from the bay that turns to the south. Then it proceeded southward to the ascent of Akrabim and continued to Zin. Then went up to the south of Kadesh Barnea and continued to Hezron. And went up to Adar and turned about at Karka. It continued to Asmon and proceeded to the brook of Egypt. And the border ended at the sea. This shall be your south border. Well, some of these places mentioned can no longer be identified. I can't even hardly pronounce them, but they can no longer be identified. However, enough can be identified in order that we can with ease set these borders. Starting at the bottom of the Dead Sea, we run straight down through the land, by the land of Edom, all the way down past the wilderness of Zin, and we dead end into that town that is there at the Sea of Aqaba. And from the Sea of Aqaba, the line begins to run northwest, up all the way past Kadesh Barnea, all the way to the Brook of Egypt, and ends at the Great Sea. That's the Mediterranean. The southern border is the shape of a huge V, a huge V. You come right here, you come down all the way down the Sea of Aqaba, and come right back up, a huge V. And that's the southern border that we have there. Then, the eastern border of Judah started where the southern border ended. However, the eastern border descriptions runs north, verse number 5. The east border was the Salt Sea, as far as the mouth of the Jordan. And the border of the north side was from the bay of the sea at the mouth of the Jordan. Then the border went up to Beth Hogla and continued to the north at Beth Araba. And the border went up to the stone of Bohan, the son of Reuben. The border went up to Debir from the valley of Achor and turned northward toward Gilgal, which is opposite the ascent of Adumim, which is on the south of the valley, and the border continued to the waters of Enshemesh, and it ended at En-Rogel. Translation, very easy. All we have to do is tell you this. You start right here where the southern border explanation started. You run all the way up right through the Dead Sea. This is Reuben's land over here to the left. And you turn and go to Gilgal and then turn and go into this spring area. It's called today in Rogel, it's called the Fountain of the Virgins. It is associated with the Gihon Springs, which it is the source of the water that goes all the way down and feeds the Pool of Siloam that is in Jerusalem today and was in the day of Hezekiah. Then the writer gives direction to the northern border of Judah in verse 8. Then the border went up the valley of Ben-Hinnom to the slope of the Jebusite on the south, and the border went up to the top of the mountain, which is before the valley of Hinnom, to the west, which is at the end of the valley of Rephaim toward the north. And from the top of the mountain of the border curved to the spring of the water of Nephtoah and proceeded to the city of Mount Ephraim. Then the border curved to Bala. The border turned about from Balaam westward to Mount Seir and continued to the slope of Mount Jerim on the north and went down to Beth Shemesh and continued to Timnah and the border proceeded to the side of Ekron northward, and the border curved to Shechoron, and continued to Mount Bela, and proceeded to Jabneel, and the border ended at the sea. Well, here we go with this. Let's just shorten this so that you understand what happened. We start exactly where we're talking about, okay? From Engrol Springs, the northern border of Judah runs west through the valley. You start right here where the, let me give me a different color here so that we can see it, a different color. It starts right here at that springs. It runs through, runs up through some mountains and all of that, comes over right about, and it's going to end right here at the Great Sea or the Mediterranean Sea. That's what all that was about. Some of those places, we have no idea where they are, but one thing we do know where is, when it mentioned at the last, it mentioned Ekron at the last. We know exactly where Ekron is. That is the top and the northern border. We know where that spring is, the Fountain of the Virgin. We know where it is right there. So that's the northern border. Some of these other places just going up and down through the valleys and through the mountains, places we can't even see or find anymore. Now, the western border of Judah is very easy. It's extremely easy. We see it in verse number 12. The western border at the Great Sea, even its coastline, this is the border around the sons of Judah according to their families. Well, here we have it again. This is an easy one. We start right here where we left off, and we come down to right here. This, by the way, is the river, Egypt River, the Wadi Egypt is right there that follows this line. So we have got, this is called the land of Judah. It's right there. That is his inheritance. Now we're going to find out something's going to happen, though. Some of this land is going to be split up to Simeon later on. But right now, we've got that as the land of Judah. So, after explaining the borders of Judah's allotment, the writer circles back around to specify Caleb's borders in Judah's territory. Remember, I've told you we circle. We keep circling around. Caleb's receipt of the gift of the land was covered back in chapter 14, verse 6 through 15. But now, here's his second pass in the story. You find this the same formula all the way through the Old Testament and the New Testament too, especially over in Romans where he tells you something, comes back and tells you a little more, comes back and tells you a little more. Same happening on all the writings that are in the Bible. It is very common for this to happen. So in our second pass through Caleb's story, we come to verse number 13. Now, he gave to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, a portion among the sons of Judah, according to the command of the Lord to Joshua, namely Kiriath Arba, Arba being the father of Anak. Well, there we have it. It's the same information as the previous. So we saw that in chapter 14. This time the writer will speak about Caleb's part in capturing Hebron that happened just a few months before, verse number 14. Caleb drove out from there the three sons of Anak, Sheshai, Ahiman, and Tamai, the children of Anak. So back in chapter 11, we learned the following about the attack on Anakim. Back in chapter 11, verse 21. Then Joshua came at that time and cut off the Anakim from the hill country, from Hebron, from Debir, from Aneb, and from all the hill country of Judah, and from all the hill country of Israel. Joshua utterly destroyed them with their cities. There were no Anakim left in the land of the sons of Israel, only in Gaza, in Gath, and in Ashdod some remained. So here in chapter 15, we learn that it was Caleb running his group of the army that actually conquered the Anakim and cut them off. No doubt Caleb was the chief of it at that time. Because of that, Caleb had been one of the chiefs that had stood on the foot of those five kings, by the way, there at the cave at Makkedah to kill those Amorite kings. From Hebron, Caleb led the attack on down to Debir, just as was mentioned back in chapter 11. But this time, through the story, we learn of the officer's prize to the man who captured Debir from Caleb, verse number 15. Then he went up from there against the inhabitants of Debir. Now the name of Debir formerly was Kiriath Sefer. And Caleb said, the one who attacks Kiriath Sefer and captured it, I will give him Asha, my daughter, as a wife. What a deal. So before Debir was taken by Caleb and the nation of Israel, the town was named Kiriath Sefer. And as we have stated here, Kiriath means city, Sefer means instruction. Therefore, the Amorite name for this town was the city of instruction, or the city of books. Debir, the new name, means a sanctuary. It's the Hebrew name for it. So the gift for the victorious man would be Caleb's daughter, Asha. Her name means ankle chain or anklet. And with the prize offered, we come to the winner of the prize in verse number 17. Othniel, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, captured it. So he gave him Asha, his daughter, as a wife. It came about that when she came to him, she persuaded him to ask her father for a field. So she alighted from the donkey, and Caleb said to her, "What do you want?" And she said, "Give me a blessing, since you have given me the land of the Negev. Give me also springs of water." So he gave her the upper spring and the lower spring. So Othniel was Caleb's nephew. Kenaz was Caleb's younger brother. We will hear of Othniel again after the death of Joshua, when the king of Mesopotamia seeks to reign over the nation of Israel, in Judges chapter 3, verses 8-9. But for now, Othniel has won the hand of the daughter of Caleb. She was unhappy. She was with the desert and the barren land that she received there in the Negev. So she asked, and she forced her husband, Othniel, to ask for a spring, and Caleb obliged, and he gave her more than just that. He actually also gave her two springs, the upper spring and the lower spring. He gave her what she asked for. What a deal. What a deal. Win a battle, win a wife. Can you believe? But that's the way some things were done back then. And I'm sure that the daughter of Caleb was worth fighting for.